Okay, good afternoon. So, as it was mentioned, I am not Michelle Larkin, but I will do the job that she was going to do, which is talk about the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's commission to build a healthy America and its recommendations that importantly call for the integration of health and community development into what each of us does within our community. I served as a staff director for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's commission, and I want to begin by talking briefly about the commission, giving you some background, and then focusing much more upon the recommendations that they made. The first point I would want to make about the commission is that the very composition of the commission, its very makeup, carries an important message for the kind of work that we need to do. So first of all, the commission was bipartisan, led by two distinguished public servants, one a Democrat, one a Republican, Mark McClellan, a Republican who served in the Bush administration as the head of CMS, as the head of the FDA, and also as a deputy treasury secretary, and Alice Rivlin, a Democrat who served as the founding director of the Congressional Budget Office and the head of the Office of Management and Budget in the Clinton administration. With them was a cast of distinguished leaders from different sectors of society. Kate Baker, who served on the President's Council of Economic Advisors, Angela Glover-Blackwell from PolicyLink, a major health advocacy and place-based focus organization, Sheila Burke, for 20 years, Bob Dole's chief of staff and former head of the Smithsonian Institutes, Mitch Daniels, a former governor of the state of Indiana, Shirley Franklin, a former mayor of Atlanta, Katie Haycock, the head of the Education Trust, one of the nation's leading education advocacy organizations, the Reverend Dr. Eileen Linder from the faith sector, Rebecca Oney from Health Leads, an organization doing innovative work in addressing the social determinants of health within healthcare settings, Q. Ree, the medical director of a major corporation, Dennis Rivera, one of the country's best-known labor leaders, Marla Salmon, a well-known dean of nursing, Carol Simpson, a former ABC News anchor, Reed Tuckson, head of a major health group, and Annie Warhover, president of a foundation representing the philanthropic sector. The important point I want to make: we will not be successful with the kind of cross-sector collaborations that are needed to move the agenda on America's health if we don't change the people sitting around the table. We need to build coalition with unlikely partners. We need to break down some of the traditional silos and bring new people to the conversation. And public health, I believe, has an important responsibility because we recognize the work of these other sectors for health. Many of people going about their daily work are unaware of the significance of the work they do for health, and we need to reach out to them and bring them to the tent so that we can work together to effectively address America's health challenges. This is a picture of the commissioners with myself and Risa Lavisa-Murray, the president of the foundation, as the two non-commissioners in the group. What did the commission recommend? Is that America needs a seismic shift in how we approach health and the actions we take, that if we continue to do what we've been doing before, we will not move the needle on health. There's more to health than health care, and the point is that most policymakers, when they think about health, think about health care or think about health behaviors. And health is, in fact, created in the places where we live, learn, work, and play, and we have to do initiatives in fact, those arenas. Why is this important? The commission emphasizes the fierce urgency of now, that America is healthy, and although we spend more money on medical care than any country in the world, in fact, according to the World Bank, half of the money spent on medical care annually is spent in the United States. We are less than 6% of the world's population, consume one half of its medical resources, but rank near the bottom of the industrialized world on health. Not only do we rank low on health, but we are losing ground over time. So, for example, in 1960, the U.S. ranked 11th in the world on infant mortality. In 2009, we ranked 31st among OECD nations. We ranked behind countries like Hungary, the Czech Republic, Greece, Israel, Portugal, and Poland are doing a better job of taking care of their infants than we are. And it's not just the minorities are doing badly. If white America were a country in 2009, it would rank 29th in the world on infant mortality. If black America were a country, it would rank 49th in the world on infant mortality. So the point is that we face a huge challenge with massive investments and little returns. Why do we need to act now? Because we are unhealthy, with 1 in 5 Americans living in unhealthy neighborhoods. And the commission characterized ways in which we can think of our communities, the places where we spend, where we live, as healthy or unhealthy, in terms of safety, in terms of the air and the environment, in terms of access to safe places to exercise, in terms of the quality of housing, in terms of access to foods and healthy options, in terms of how well-kept our homes and neighborhoods are, access to primary care within our communities, and accessible safe places for transportation, walking, and bike paths. So on a broad range of dimensions, we can think of how the places where we are located dramatically shape our health. Here is an example of one of the commission's maps, looking at how health varies dramatically in a relatively short distance. And this is the area where we are, the New Orleans area. And you can see just a few miles away, you see differences in life expectancy from 55 years in one community to 80 years in another. Just an illustration of how across the United States, from one community to another, from one county to another, there are large variations in health. How do we get at some of the underlying forces that drive health? We need to think of income and access to opportunities for income within communities. Income shapes access to healthy food, access to quality of social networks, exposure to advertisements for harmful substances. It shapes the quality of schools. It shapes access to employment opportunities. And similarly, education also is a driver of access to resources and opportunities that promote health. And we can think along a broad range of dimensions, from working conditions to social standing, to access to networks, to knowledge about health, to openness to knowledge, information about health, where education can play an important role. So the Commission's report then emphasized that we cannot be satisfied with healthcare reform. Medical care, as important as it is, in our society functions as a repair shop that takes care of us once we get sick. Does not have much to do with whether we get sick or not in the first place. And so we need to think of the effective ways that we get at some of the key drivers of health. To improve health, the commission concluded, we must improve opportunities to make healthy decisions. We must revisit current investments that reflect outdated strategies. We must work across sectors, I've been emphasizing this. And importantly, we need to build on pockets of success. I think there's a hunger across the country in looking for solutions and looking for things that work, and we need to point individuals and groups interested in those directions. There were 3 key recommendations from the 2013 Commission, building on the 10 from the earlier Commission's report. 1, make investing in America's youngest children a high priority. 2, fundamentally integrate health into community development. And 3, broaden our mindset from treating illness to helping people lead healthy lives. I'll briefly talk about recommendations 1 and 3, but really focus most of my time on the 2nd recommendation, which is most relevant to the built environment. There is overwhelming evidence that the foundations of health in adulthood are laid in childhood. And there is enormous opportunity for improving the health of the United States in the future by paying attention to creating opportunities for our children to be healthy. The Commission calls for stronger quality standards, for linking funding to quality, so we're not calling just for more programs, we're calling for more high-quality programs. And we are also calling for America to take as a goal the enrollment of all low-income children under age 5 in early childhood guaranteed high-quality environments by 2025. We also believe it's important, we need to think not only what we do for the children, but we need to think of how we can improve the lives of parents so we improve the quality of opportunities for their children. And importantly, we see the need to invest in research and innovation because not all of the early childhood programs out there are benefiting from the latest science of what we need to do to enhance early childhood development. 2, fundamentally change how we revitalize neighborhoods, fully integrating health into community development. We call for speeding the integration of finance, health, and community development to revitalize neighborhoods and improve health. We called for the importance of establishing incentives and performance measures to spur collaboration. And again, there are many wonderful examples that are working out there. We need to replicate them. We need to integrate them. We need to invest in innovation. Number three, I've talked about this one, broaden the mindset from treating illness to helping people lead healthy lives, adopting new health vital signs, just as the typical healthcare provider has a set of vital signs he assesses on every patient. There's social and behavioral vital signs that predict how a population is doing. Last Thursday, the Institute of Medicine released a report on the social and behavioral measures for the electronic medical record. It provides one opportunity of a set of measures that would be the social and behavioral vital signs that can help us as we move forward. Now, on recommendation number two, improving lives in the community, one of the things our report does, and I would encourage you to go to the RWJ Commission's website where you can find a copy of our report, it highlights a number of examples of programs that are doing an excellent job, doing the kind of work that we think is so important in the country. And I want to talk about a couple of them. The first one is purpose-built communities. It started with a project in Eastlake, Atlanta, and it used integrative strategies, including cradle-to-college educational opportunities, mixed-income housing, early childhood development program, recreational opportunities, to improve the quality of life. Importantly, in the East Atlanta purpose-built community, there was a focus on the outset that it would not be an attempt to address one problem at a time, but think of all the social challenges the community faced and addressing all of them simultaneously and bringing together community leadership, the voice of the community, with wealthy philanthropists and other sectors of the community to work together to improve health. I think I mentioned that already. Some of the Eastlake results, there's been a 95% reduction in crime in the Eastlake community since its launch in 1995. The employment rate of low-income individuals has gone from 13% at baseline to 70% currently. In terms of educational performance, at the start of the program, 5% of students in the local school were reading at above grade level. Today, 96% of them are. And there are more than 2,100 mixed-income homes built as a result of this initiative. Purpose-built communities are now being planned in a number of other communities in the United States, like New Orleans and Indianapolis, Charlotte, among many others. Another example I would highlight is the Houston's Neighborhood Centers. This is another example we showcase in the Commission's report. Here we have neighborhood centers that serve 400,000 people each year. Importantly, providing a one-stop shopping of many of the challenges that individuals face where they can find at one place, from childcare services to banking services to counseling to health centers to charter schools to immigration services. It's a broad range of meeting the needs of the community, addressing some of the underlying problems that they face. So the bottom line is, if we will be successful with the kind of investment that we need to improve the quality of life in neighborhoods, public health cannot do it by itself. We need all hands on deck. We need to bring public safety and education and community development and health and economic development and community empowerment together, working together to improve the lives of the communities. And we must begin with a clear recognition that the status quo is broken, and we need to find new ways to invest in the right things that make this, some typos there, that was prison versus preschool, special education versus tutoring, emergency rooms versus grocery stores, and police versus job training. I think in the translation, the slides got messed up. This is the Commission's report, Time to Act, Investing in the Health of Our Children and Communities. And you can find a report on the Commission's website. You can get a PDF of the document, the full report, which is about 100 pages, and an executive summary, which is about one-fifth of that. We think that it's a wonderful resource. Most of what the report consists of is examples of success and models of financing that different communities are taking to try to solve the problem. So it's a wonderful way to look at potential options, potential opportunities, what can be done, and we encourage you as you go back to your own communities to prioritize the importance of building the kind of cross-sector collaborations that we need so that we can improve health and build evaluation and metrics for monitoring our progress into all that we do. Thank you very much.